I can be an expert in the content, okay? But with teaching my 2ELs and with the three-way cycle, students are gonna become being the experts. So here's an idea. You are the experts, you talk, and the content is gonna be also discussed from within the students in the classroom.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast from Elevation Education that explores how we can help make an impact on our nation's highest growing student demographic, multilingual learners. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. I've had the privilege of meeting with lots of educators over the last few weeks as I've attended conferences and visited schools around the country. It's been a bit of a listening tour, which has been amazing for me to do, get back out in the field. And it's been incredibly inspiring to hear from people who engage in our EL community via this podcast, blog posts, and other content. And for those of you who use Elevation's products in your schools, you've been so open to conversations about what is working for you and what we need to work on for you. If you're not a member of our community, go to elevationeducation.com and click the resources button on the top right. You'll find all our free content and a form to join the thousands of educators who already get free resources delivered to their inbox every week. I promise you, the resources are good and they're all free, whether you're an Elevation partner or not. One more thing before we start, I'm recording this on April 3rd, and I know from my experience as a high school teacher that this time of year can be tough. So I want to take a moment to express our profound appreciation for the work you do each and every day to support your students. I hope you take a minute to take a breath and remember that you are valued for all the work you do. And I hope this episode's guest provides some inspiration for you to continue doing that work, which is the most important job that we can think of. That being said, we have the pleasure of talking with Adrian Mendoza about embracing mathematical mindsets today. And before you find another episode to listen to, I promise this conversation goes far beyond math. So no matter what your content area is or what your specialty is, this is a conversation that you don't want to miss. Here are some of the essential questions that we'll tackle here. What are three mathematical mindsets that can guide instruction for multilingual learners and help them thrive? How can teachers approach academic conversations and building in differentiation in a way that won't feel overwhelming? See, that's not math specific. Finally, what can teachers do to ensure they are building in time for high quality interactions while delivering instruction? Also not completely math specific. We discuss these questions and much more with Adrian Mendoza. Adrian joined us at our Impact Conference last year, and we just had to bring him back for a podcast interview. It has taken too long, but we finally did it, and I'm excited to have him. He's provided professional development to educators in districts and educational service centers for more than 7 years, working with teachers and parents in the United States, Mexico, and Costa Rica. Adrian joined our friends at Seidlitz Education from his previous role as an instructional math coach at San Marcos CISD. His commitment leads him to innovate in the education area, and his present action research project is about the importance of building mathematical growth mindset communities. Adrian is also an author of the book Teaching Math to ELs, which we highly recommend. As always, thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations, and I hope you enjoy this conversation that's not just about math with Adrian Mendoza. Are you calling in from Monterrey?
Yes.
Is that where you are full time now?
Yes, this is where I'm full time. I'll hope to say full time, but yeah, like half time. This is where I live.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm working mostly in Texas. But yes.
So a lot of travel. In your life.
Yeah, lots of traveling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. I've never been. I've heard it's a beautiful place.
And it keeps growing. So every time I come back, there's like different things going on here. And it's just been growing. And it's good to be here.
Great. Well, I love the international ones that we get to talk to people that are in other countries. Okay. Well, let's dive in. First, Adrian Mendoza, thank you so much for joining us on Highest Aspirations. It's great to have you.
Hey, Steve. Hello. Thank you. Same thing. Nice being here. I appreciate the invitation. I'm excited about the talking just in general about everything. So thank you, Steve.
Yeah, so we knew that we wanted to talk with you for quite a while, and you joined us on our Elevation Impact conference. We had some technical difficulties, but I was amazed at the amount of people who came back for the second session that we did a week later, and that speaks to I think the relevance and the importance of the topic that we talked about in that session, and that we're going to talk about in the podcast today. By the way, I have to tell you that my wife, who is a math interventionist here in New Hampshire, is a big fan of yours. So I told her that I would mention that on the podcast, and that made her happy. So there it is.
Boom there. So yeah, I think just as in the classroom, like it's natural things happen. So yeah, I do remember that first podcast. I got froze. Those technology problems that they always happen in classrooms, and I was like, boom, we'll make it work. And yes, I did appreciate when I sent an email and they said again, people were still there, and then we're gonna have a chance to do it again. People that came back, I think we also had a good time, good conversations there. Mm-hmm. So it was a great experience there. Thank you.
Yeah. And I have to say, for anybody who's listening and doesn't see the video, we'll put a video clip of that earlier, but you have a golden mic that is one of your daughters and that is glowing neon on your neck. And it's amazing. I want that microphone.
Yeah, some of the recommendations was a microphone there. So I was like, boom, do I have one? So yes, I do have a couple. My daughters, Camila and Sophia, which I'm going to talk about my Camilas, my Sophias. I usually talk about them during conferences.
I remember that in the Impact event. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just using their microphone. I asked them, how do they work? They have different like echo sounds. So I'm hopefully I don't push the wrong button, but I think we should be okay there.
Yeah, well, it'll make it interesting if we hear a little echo. Now people know if you do hear an echo, that's why. It's not on my end. It's on Adrian Mendoza's end. Okay, all right. So let's dive in. So I used to be a person who said, and I don't think you're supposed to say this anymore, but I used to be a person who said I'm not a math person. But over the course of the last sort of 5-ish years at Elevation, I've talked to a lot of people who are math specialists, and particularly they work with multilingual learners in math. And I'm sort of a language person. I taught high school Spanish for a long time. And now I'm seeing the kind of blend of both of these worlds come together. And I think a lot of others are as well. So it's really, really exciting for me. And I know for you, this is where I kind of want to start. You talk about this idea of embracing mathematical mindsets, which I think is something that I could have used when I was learning math in school. And you outlined three of those in your book. So I want to start there. How does embracing these mathematical mindsets create an environment that helps students like me, and especially students who are multilingual learners, thrive in class?
Okay, so that's a good starting point there. Usually during trainings, we talk about mindsets. Sometimes, even with math, we always want to get into content. Okay, so talking about mindsets, you started saying, I'm not a math person.
Well, I've changed. I used to say that, not anymore. I know not to say that anymore.
Well, and there's people that say that. Co-wrote this Teaching Math to ELs. It's a series that Tina Bean started mm-hmm. with teaching science to ELs. And when I got this phone call, she said, Adrian, I'm not a math person, or I used not to be a math person. So I think that was those were the conversations that we needed to have before we were writing the book. I don't know what's the feeling about the Cowboys, football, talking about football uh-huh. there. So I always say like math is like the Cowboys. Either you like them or you hate them. I think with the Pats or other football teams, there's this thing about I love mathematics. Or there's some kids that say, I hate mathematics. I'm not just good at mathematics. So I did make some of the research. I'll give lots. Some of the research that I made was also, I'll refer to Dr. Joe Butler. Mm-hmm. She has her website, her books about mindsets in classrooms. So I embrace this three-way cycle that starts with saying math is open, it's multidimensional. Where we, first of all, we provide multiple entry points for kids in the classroom, mm-hmm. okay? There's different ways, all kids think in different ways. My daughters, Camila and Sophia, this is the first time I'll talk about my Camila and Sophia. When Camila was born, we had this connection, and I was thinking that everything was going to be working perfectly with my Sophia. And then I realized I got to do something different. And I was thinking I'm not a Sophia person, but with different entry points at this point, I'm getting my two daughters to connect with me. So that's what I also bring into my classroom. So math is open, multidimensional. There's different perspectives, especially when we get students coming from different places, okay, from different countries. We want to be able to respect students' ideas and connections. So there's five ways we thrive. We start where students are. Okay, so just making sure that kids come with ideas. Let's start with that point. We also, with making math multidimensional, we also provide choice. Okay, so there's different choices. These are different methods. Okay, kids get to choose, and when they get to choose, the ownership also comes alive. The second component, and I'll talk. The second component talks about how do we visualize in math classrooms. Now, when we, I, well, when I learned mathematics, there were no visuals at all. Nothing. It was like you solve problems. And nowadays, we look at the standards. We look at all the visuals that we're teaching with all these different tools. And sometimes we have that mindset like, oh, I don't think I'm gonna need that visual because that's not how I learn in a math classroom. But also thinking about who are my kids and how that visual, it's also gonna provide access to language in the classroom. And we'll talk about the importance of language in the classroom. We also talk about encouraged dialogue, which is math is conversations and connections. And this is the beauty. When I go and visit my classrooms, I see Camila's and Sophia's. When I have visited my Camila's and my Sophia's inner classrooms, I just want to hear them talk. I want to see what they say. I want to see how they connect. And then I do like to celebrate successes and talk to with my Camila's and Sophia's. And I think that's a cycle that if we can prepare every single lesson where kids' ideas are accepted, where we visualize that and kids can have those conversations, there's where the tribe also comes alive.
Gotcha. So my follow-up question, you kind of got to this a little bit specifically, I think, with your Camilas and Sofias. And by the way, I love talking about that. I have four kids and they're all very different, and I know exactly what you mean. And by the way, I know your children. How old are your girls now?
Nine and six,
Okay,
nine.
so mine are a little older. They're a teenage one's getting ready to go to college. And let me tell you something that it never changes, though. You still always need to find those entry points, which I think is probably the same with students as they grow. My connection here, my question here is thinking about these mathematical mindsets, how do they guide instruction for a teacher maybe who is new to working with multilingual learners? Because we have a lot of math teachers, as you mentioned, who are, and I shouldn't just pick on math teachers, any content teacher who are content first, right? But then, demographics change. You have I think the advantage and the wonderful pleasure of having these multilingual learner students come into your room, but you don't know what to do. You think, all right, well, how am I going to deliver this content if these students are having a hard time understanding the language? So how do these mindsets guide instruction for teachers for multilingual learners?
Okay, thank you for asking that question. By the way, I was in the classroom. Usually, sometimes when I talk about the book Teaching Math to ELs again, that's a common question. Like, have you been in the classroom before? And the answer is yes. I taught fifth grade math and science. At some point, I started working in middle school. At some point, as an instructional coach, I went from kinder to 12th grade. The reason why I'm saying this is that I did make a lot of mistakes when we were writing this book.
I didn't make any mistakes when I was teaching.
Yes, and I still make mistakes. We still make those mistakes there in the classroom there. Okay, so it's like. So when we were writing this book, we have this awesome Silas scene with Anna Mattis, John Silas, Tina Bean, Dr. Monica Lara. We were talking about the book. And one of the common questions John was asking me, he said, Adrian, go back to your first, second year teaching. Okay. By the way, my second year teaching was my worst year ever teaching. Usually they say the second year is going to get better. It didn't get better. My
Sophomore
first
slump.
year, yeah, my first year, I got lots of support. Okay. So then they say second year is going to get better. Boom. There's where I did make some of the mistakes that I had. So it's like, boom. So what can I do on my third year? Okay. So teaching materials, it's for these beginner teachers, first, second year, third year. But at some point, all these teachers like us, that we still keep making those mistakes in the classroom. So how does this mathematical cycle support teachers in the classroom, especially when we have newcomers, multilingual learners in the classroom? First of all, this book provides with different activities like step one, step two, step number three, different activities that provide number one entry point for all students. So thinking about Camila's and Sophia's, I'm doing a lesson. My first lesson is talking. Let's pretend we're talking about the history in Texas or mm-hmm. in the United States. Okay. I always think if my Camila, okay, can talk about that history, I got one student, but there, I might have other students that have no idea and there's no starting point for them. So with mathematical, making math open, it's always making sure that we have that mindset that we're providing entry points to every single student in the classroom and making those connections as we elevate the content expectations, we're also elevating those language expectations. Mm-hmm. Every single part of the strategy is now we as teachers, we also need to have the mindset of thinking about the different visuals that kids might be using in the classroom. Visuals help with making content comprehensible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Some of our kids might be one visual away from understanding the content before they go into the different language.
I love that way. I love that way of putting it, by the way, one visual away from understanding. Yeah. I love that.
Yes, and there's where we go back to my Camilas, my Sofias, which is that visual away. And sometimes we might need two or three or four different visuals until we get that aha moment mm-hmm. in the classroom. And then the beauty of this is when we come up with visuals, students can also come up with their different visuals.
Right.
And when they talk about those visuals in the classroom, those conversations, you see their faces, you see those kids making connections. And there's this is our time where we celebrate success, especially when you're a newcomer. Any moment for a celebration in a math classroom, we're going to take that. And it's not going to be Mr. Mendoza's ideas anymore. It's going to be my students' ideas. And every time I see a visual that's come from Steve, I'm going to go back and say, do you see that visual that Steve brought into my classroom? Yeah. And they're going to keep trying. And that's how we're also going to be lowering the effective filter mm-hmm. in math classrooms. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be this, like, I'm not a math person or I hate math. We're still going to go little by little, but we're going to be celebrating those successes.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Some ownership as well there too, when you have your own visuals that you're using. So looking at the book, you've organized it into four different categories. So you have setting the stage, content delivery, show what you know, and assessment. And we don't have time today to get into all of those. So I wanted to focus on some subcategories that seem to be particularly challenging for many educators. And these are kind of selected based on the conversations that I've had before. Not really my own experience in the classroom. But these two seem to be big ones. And they're interactive direct instruction, which I understand as the ability to deliver direct instruction with some breaks so that you have some interaction happening while you do that. Because direct instruction isn't necessarily a terrible thing. I think people kind of look at it now as like, oh, don't do that. But there's sometimes it's necessary. And then the other one is academic conversations, which we've talked about a lot. And we've talked to, you know, Jeff Sweers about it, who is very well known in the space. We've talked to John Seidlitz, who you mentioned about it. We've talked to a lot of people about it. But I want to get into those two things. As a teacher myself, I would often find myself delivering direct instruction for longer than I wanted or longer than I thought I was, unless I had a timer on, which I did at some points. And I was horrified by the amount of time that I was just lecturing students. It's something that I had to work really, really hard to avoid. I think I got better at it over time, but certainly in my first couple of years of teaching, I was terrible at that. So my question is related. What are some ways that math teachers on that first one can ensure that they're building in time for high quality interactions while delivering direct instruction?
Okay, so you started actually with the question. There's no time to cover all the different chapters of the book, and that's a good point. But that's also what happens in the classroom when
Yeah.
talking to teachers. Again, there's no time to cover all these different pieces in the classroom, all these different conversations. So direct teach. Talking about the different chapters. By the way, this is something. Once again, this is a third book. Okay. A series of the first book is Teaching Science to ELs. No, I'm sorry, Teaching Social Studies to ELs. Then we did then Silas Tina Bean with Dr. Filner did Teaching Science to ELs. And now we're going into Teaching Math to ELs. The chapters, okay, all of them are the same. We cover the same chapters. We're just changing the activities in each of the chapters. When we were talking about direct teach, okay, so in a math classroom, once again, there's too many standards we get to cover, okay, and we want to teach content, 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 and content. One of the mindsets that we need to understand is when we teach math, okay, and a question that Valentina Gonzalez asked me at some point is, can we teach math without teaching language? And the answer was like, oh, that's impossible. That's impossible. Okay. And sometimes we focus a lot on math, math, math. And as teachers, sometimes, yes, we are experts because we know the content and we want to deliver as much as possible. Okay. But always keeping in mind that as we're teaching math, okay, the language is also coming there. And I will say language is going to come first. Okay. So can we teach language without teaching math? And the answer is going to be yes. So on this Teaching Math to ELs book, there's different strategies for let's start with direct teach. One of the activities it's called Turn and Tell Five. Now, usually when talking with teachers, they say, I don't have time for my lessons. And there's different ways to structure conversations in the classroom where we let them talk, we let them write, okay? But sometimes conversations don't need to be super long. Sometimes I'm talking for 10 minutes, then turn until five, share with your neighbor, and you have 5 seconds just to recall the previous slide or just to read a little statement. Okay. And when those kids talk during those 5 seconds, as a teacher, I slow down, I check for understanding. That's also some process time. Okay. So there's no rule about how much time we have in each classroom, because I know different teachers. I just have 45 minutes. I have 1 hour 30 minutes to deliver. But just always keeping in mind, as you mentioned, like sometimes as a teacher, I'm talking too much. We need to end up being facilitators of learning. And at the end of the day, yes, I can be an expert in the content, okay? But with teaching math to ELs and with the three-way cycle, students are going to become being the experts. So here's an idea. You are the experts, you talk, and the content is going to be also discussed from within the students in the classroom.
You know, one thing that you said that really resonates with me, and I went to a and again, I taught high school Spanish, or different situation, but I went to a workshop one time that talked about this, like how do you break up the direct instruction and get students speaking and using the language? And the facilitator ended up doing something that I started doing when I was facilitating professional development, which was this: close your eyes. We don't have to do it right now, but close your eyes, and I'm going to set a timer for 30 seconds. Don't do anything. Just sit there. And people are shocked and amazed how long 30 seconds is, how much you can say in 30 seconds, no matter if you're fluent in the language or you're new. You can do so much in that time. And so I have what it does is it takes down, I guess you could call it, the effective filter of teachers thinking, well, I don't have time to do these things. Well, do you have 15 seconds, 30 seconds to just stop for a sec? And you mentioned, like, it gives you time to gather yourself, to figure out what's next, to observe what's happening with students. So I'm really glad you brought that up. That, because I think a lot of people think, well, it's 10 minutes or 5 minutes or even 3 minutes, but it doesn't have to be, right?
Yes, and yes, for these kids, like those 30 seconds, just getting started with something, some process time. In the book, I do mention there's in math classrooms, there's lots of like what I call ghost students. Usually, a ghost student will be this student that will go into the classroom. And if you don't expect those students to talk, they're going to sit there, they're going to go to a different classroom, they're going to go to a different classroom, they're going to go home. like nothing happened. And my goal, my mission is when I go and coach is like, who are those Go students? How can we get them started with those even 30 seconds? Just think about it, cheer, process. So yeah, those 30 seconds might be, they can be those golden rules. Those kids might be those 30 seconds away from producing language and from going from I'm not a math person to yeah, I'm a math person and I can process math in classrooms.
Yeah, this is a great way of putting it. Okay, so from direct instruction with some interactions to academic conversations. So let me start here. I think in many cases, we are probably not you and I at this point, but I think there was a time when I was first starting my teaching career that I would look at multilingual learners' social language abilities. I would hear them speaking in the hallways. I would speak with them on my, you know, just a personal conversation. And I would think, oh, these kids are well equipped to participate fully in their classes. So how come this teacher's worried about the production of this particular student in math or in science class? But what I learned quickly and what we all know now is that this is not the case. So I guess my first question here is more of a general question. Well, I guess I'll back up. Like, are you? My question is, how do we help show teachers the difference between social and academic language? But let's take it a step further out. Do you think that this is still something that teachers get confused by and struggle with? Or is that changing now? Because I've been out of the classroom for a while.
Yes, and that's a thing. And I'll share my experience. Okay, so I'm from Mexico, and actually I live in Mexico. So in 2009, I was invited to go to Texas to teach, multilingual learners. Okay, so first time in the classroom, I'm supposed to help them with language in the classroom. So first time in my classroom, I noticed that all my students, were speaking more fluent than I was. Like, I was like, I did come, I have an accent, and I'm very proud of my accent. Okay, but then I go there and have my accent, and I see my kids talking like they're kind of fluent. And I was like, and I went with my principal and I said, like, how am I gonna, their English is better than mine.
Yeah.
Okay, talking about accent. And I was like, and there's what I said and say, and my principal said, well, let's look at where your kids are at. Okay, yes, they can speak. If you hear them at recess, yes, they can produce language. But then I started looking at their folders, paperwork, help us and say, well, we have students at different levels in terms of language acquisition and academic language. Mm-hmm. So there's where, yes, knowing our kids, they might be able to talk in recess, PE, sometimes your conversations with them, you might be feeling, yes, these kids, they know English, they will understand everything. But when I went into teaching and then also like grading, asking them to speak, there was some academic language that was missing. And there's where I understood, why am I in these classrooms? Okay. Now with this, with the Teaching Math 2 Years book, okay, we are aware of this. Okay, thinking about how every single lesson there's academic language vocabulary, most of these language words, the speaking about Spanish, these might be what we call cognates. Okay, so mm-hmm. cognates are words, same block from one language to the other one. Okay, so understanding that there's some cognates that even kids knowing those cognates, every single student in my classroom might not be able to understand what those words are, and there's where we need to go back and create teach. Now, I did make an example about Camilas and Sofias. Worst thing what we can do in the math classrooms is to start making assumptions. Sometimes we make assumptions like, all my kids know what's a circo. And people look at me, what's a circo? And then I make a joke and I make a gesture of a circo. Okay, and there's where kids are understanding, making that connection with that visual mm-hmm. and say, oh, I know what he's talking about. Un círculo, maestro. Ya vi lo que es el círculo. So there's what we're going to be building and just bringing from that social language to that academic language in the classroom. And of course, every single activity has those sentence starters. Where I highly recommend that in every single sentence starter, we put academic language. Or we offer a word bank with academic language. And when kids talk, we check for understanding. And we also celebrate successes mm-hmm. in math classrooms.
Two things that you've said, I think, something similar in two different ways. And I want to dive into this because I think it's interesting. You used the word just now, pre-teach, and you used pre-teach with the idea of pre-teaching language. And earlier you said, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to try to quote you. You said, you can teach language without math, but you can't teach math without language. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So pre-teaching is one of these words that some people have a hard time with. Like they don't like that word pre-teaching. So explain, if you would, what you mean, like maybe even give us an example of what that looks like. If you need to teach language before teaching math, and if you need to pre-teach, what does that look like to you? Because I think some people get the idea of these vocabulary quizzes every week where you memorize vocabulary and you write it down and then you forget about it 5 minutes later. That's not what this is. So I want to make sure people have an understanding of what you mean by that.
Okay. So yeah, pre-teaching. So first of all, we're expecting kids to practice language or use words that they're not familiar with. So yes, a pre-teaching can start with a simple pronunciation. Okay. So can all of you pronounce exponential growth? And then we say, oh, exponential growth, and kids can hear it. Okay. If we expect them to use that language, they can hear it. And then that repetition is going to help them in a safe environment. Then if I say exponential growth and I do a gesture of a hand, like growing exponentially, okay. Oh, I can see. And I show them a graph, like this is exponential growth with that visual. Okay, once again, I'm bringing my Camilas, my Sofias, and every student in the classroom. Let's pretend we're playing a game. And in that game, half of my kids don't know how to play the game. What my role is when I pre-teach is to make sure that all these kids know how to play the game. When I do this gesture, I might be bringing four or five more students into the game. Yeah. Then I do the pronunciation, I'm bringing two more. What if I show a visual where my kids make a connection about a baseball visual where kids now talk about exponential growth? I might be bringing three or four more students into the game. So with pre-teaching, these are like two or three little things that are going to help all kids to be part of the conversations, part of the lesson, and they're going to become those language experts.
Yeah, that's a great way of explaining it. I appreciate you elaborating on that. And I love the game analogy because we all know from, like, I'm a person who you can read the instructions to me, but I have no idea how to play the game until I actually sit down and play it or watch somebody else play it. But there are plenty of people, you know, I think about one of my kids and then my wife are people who need to sit and read the directions and be like pre-taught how to play the game. And so when they do that, you have them on board. And then when we sit down and actually do it, now I'm on board. Now I understand it, but you can't do everything the same way. And that's the same thing with pre-teaching. I think people have the concept that it's one way to do it. You go over the vocabulary and then you move on. But there's so many ways to do it. And in order to get everybody on board, you have to try all of them, right? Whatever's in your tool belt.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And just as you mentioned with your kids, okay, our goal is to get all kids to be part of the game. You want to get them excited into those math classrooms. Typically in math classrooms, there's always one or two students that know how to play the game. Okay. And we as teachers, okay, there's three things that we can control. Usually there's, we talk about there's no time for the lesson. So there's no, or I have kids that they will never be able to do this. Okay. Or I have, so the three things from this is come from the Shelter Instruction in Texas book. Mm-hmm. Three things that we can control is motivation, access to language, and quality of instruction. So every time I do my lesson, how can I motivate? Or what is that picture that's going to motivate my students? How can I provide that quality of instruction? But also, how am I going to provide access to language for my kids so that all of them can be part of the lesson? And yes, a typical math classroom, there's two or three kids constantly being the ones raising their hands, and the other ones like, oh, I'm just going to be waiting for the ones who know how to play the game. Right. But our goal is to make sure that all our kids can play that game in those math classrooms.
Yeah, and I would even, like, I don't mean to belabor this point, but, like, you know, when I hear play the game at school, I think about students who just know how to do school, right? But they know how to do school in kind of the traditional way that may be effective for them, but it's not effective for many other students. So we also need to kind of think about the game and how you change the game so that everybody's involved. And I guess that's another conversation for another time. I don't mean to get all philosophical. But that actually does lead me into my next question, which is, it's a bit of a natural transition. I want to talk briefly about differentiation, because I am sure that there are people listening, as there always are, who, and I hate being an idealist. I hate being a person who proposes these solutions but doesn't sort of answer the devil's advocate question or address the elephant in the room. And I think in this case, the elephant in the room, people are listening and thinking, well, I have a class full of multilingual learners at varying stages in their language journey. I have a newcomer. I have some students who are nearly fluent, but maybe are lacking some of the academic language. And I have everything in between. And by the way, I also have 10 students who aren't multilingual learners who have their own sort of set of challenges that they need to overcome and advantages that they have. So this is a big assumption, but let's assume that the teachers have the data to identify students' abilities. Shameless plug. They have Elevation. They look at the plaque. They know exactly what's going on, where their students are, what level they are. That's a big assumption, because many students don't have, teachers don't have that, but let's say they do. They have the data. What are the first steps they should take when thinking about differentiating instruction? This is a good time to think about this. It's kind of, we're getting to the end of the school year. We're thinking about next year. What steps can we take to think about first steps in differentiating for all of these students?
Okay, so once again, I'm going to go back to the mathematical mindset, okay? So those multiple entry points, when we talk about differentiation, yeah, there's multiple students, there's Camilas, there's Sofias at different levels. Now, when I talk about Camilas and Sofias, I'm not saying Camila or Sofia, I'm not saying who is better than each other, mm-hmm. okay? Sometimes your low students, okay, they might be low in terms of language, or they might be beginners in terms of language development, but they might have different aspects coming from different classrooms. Okay, so sure. Some of the first steps, I think first step will be knowing who are our kids. Okay, you did mention that if there's a classroom, what we know have different levels, understanding who is in my classroom, looking at data is going to be important as we look at data, what can kids produce, okay, and how we're going to start where kids are at in the classrooms, okay? Mm-hmm. In every single activity on the Teaching Math 2 ELS book, yes, we do have, like, what can we do when we have beginners, intermediates, fluent, advanced, high? One of the things when we have, like, newcomers, okay, sometimes time, okay? Some of those students might take some time to produce language. Those kids, just as when we were born, like, we were not going to talk, like, the first, second day. We're teaching gestures, we're teaching language, we're practicing. It might take them a couple of weeks to produce one sentence. Then we're going to go from those simple sentences, we're going to be celebrating with those sentences with different scaffolds. Now, sometimes in classrooms, we do offer different choices. And one of the things in common question from teachers is, Adrian, do I give them three choices? And I tell kids, you're a beginner, you're not a beginner, and you're going to do this or that. We as teachers have more choices. Let's pretend we're talking about sentence starters. There's three sentence starters. Some sentence starters might be for beginners, intermediate, and advanced high. Okay, so as we offer those two or three sentence starters, some of our kids, even your beginners, at some point, they're going to try to attempt the different levels without even knowing. Mm-hmm. Okay, but some others, non-participation, we get into a complete sentence, and that's going to be a celebration. I think the accountability part as well. I think knowing kids being aware that as we're raising the content, we're also raising the language, and kids come as language experts. Just as me, like, I come with an accent. My second year teaching, I have a parent saying, Mr. Mendoza, my daughter is in your classroom, but I'm going to move her from your classroom because you have an accent.
Oh.
And I don't think she's going to be learning from you. And I was like, boom.
Oh,
Talking
man.
to my principal, my awesome principal, Nikki Konicki, she said, Adrian, you're not a problem. Okay. Yes, you have an accent. Okay. But having an accent means probably you speak multiple languages. Okay. And yes, you're an expert in language. And kids, all these kids come, even your newcomers, they're language experts. Okay. So it's also about the mindset that we have with those kids. And as we provide those accommodations, well, we're also going to be building in that confidence. And then we provide comprehensible input, which once again, bringing those visuals, those gestures, okay, those accommodations, plus the low stress opportunities for output, okay, making it open for the kids. Now, there's a misconception also in math. Well, not a misconception, but there's this tendency that thinking that math is all about the answers. Like the answers. If I don't know the answer, I'm not a math
That's what it
person.
was for me. Yep.
That's how like answers, answers, answers. Nowadays, okay, with growth mind with mindset, then the process is more important than the answer. Some kids might know the answers, but they don't even know how they're getting to into those answers.
Right.
So you're also going with the process. Those are also opportunities for celebrations with our newcomers. And we go from there. And we're growing every single student. There's also this thing about bubble students, like these are my bubble kids. I think we're all bubble kids. We all want to go from if let's just talking about numbers. If I'm in the 40s, I want to go to the 50s. If I'm in the 70s, I want to go to the 80s. I think that growth is going to be a component as we go from differentiating in the classroom.
Yeah, great, great. I don't have much of a follow-up there. That was a really good explanation. I would recommend, and I do this once in a while, if you are if you want to kind of recap what was just said, I would go back 3 to 5 minutes and listen to that because there's a lot of good stuff there on differentiation. And I think you're coming back to this mindset idea, which I think is really, really important, particularly with language. And it's so nice to see these things changing. I mean, I think we take a moment, you talk about celebrations. I mean, I think we can take a moment and really think about and celebrate the fact that mindsets are shifting. It's slow in different places, it's faster than others. But that's a great thing. And I see it with my own kids who are not multilingual learners, but I see the way that math is being approached. Again, I see it with my wife who's in math, and it's just a totally different world than the one that I was learning in or was trying to learn in. It was a struggle for me. So that's nice to see. So moment for celebration and appreciation there. So I want to end the kind of content part of our conversation, Adrian, with as I mentioned, we were lucky enough to have you as a facilitator at our annual Impact event in at the end of 2022. You did a great session despite the technical difficulties. And one thing that you emphasized that really stuck out to me, and I know a few of my colleagues, and you, I think you said it a few times, and you made the participants who are on Zoom remotely say it as well. And that was, if students don't verbalize, students don't internalize. Tell us more about that, what you mean by that.
Boom. Okay, so once again, this is a John Sadis thing. Okay, I started training with Sadis Education, and that's something that we're building into classrooms. Okay, how do we bring those conversations alive and those connections? So we do during trainings, we do these gestures where we show two fingers up front, and then we say, students don't verbalize. And then I ask teachers to use those two fingers again, and then say, students will not internalize. And I ask them to touch their hearts. Okay. And then I ask them to feel it, like start, like feel like get into that feeling. Okay. Yes, I can be doing all the talking. But just allowing kids to start verbalizing to internalize in the classroom. Okay. Also be thinking about students' hearts. Okay. When they start verbalizing. Okay. When you see kids talking with those faces, celebration. And also as a teacher, when I see my kids verbalizing, I can see who where kids are, okay, in terms of like differentiation. I can check for understanding, and I'm gonna keep celebrating from there. If I get to visit once again my daughters into a classroom, yes, I would love to see the teacher talking. Okay. But when I go and visit my daughters, when I see my girls, which every time I go into a classroom, I do see my girls, my Camilas, my Sofias are there. I love to see the teachers talking. We like to talk as teachers, but the main thing is How many times are we going to provide time for my Camilas, my Sophias to verbalize, to celebrate those successes in the classroom? And I think that's one of the goals as I go and visit classrooms. That's one of the parts as we keep transforming education. Typically, every other content, like science, that science is changing. Talking to science teachers, they say science is constantly changing. History is changing. Sometimes math is not changing. We go back to the same old mistakes that we've been making. So I think just providing those opportunities where kids come with different ideas, that's the biggest thing there. So I do feel it. I just like, yes, students need to verbalize and we're going to celebrate from there.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that's a great way to kind of, we come right back to the beginning of the conversation when we go to that expression. So I'm glad we sort of ended the content piece there. I just have two more questions for you, Adrian, and they're more sort of logistical. So it was great to have you on Impact, and just like a shout out to that. That's a free conference that Elevation does every year. It's virtual. We'll do it again at the end of this year. Information will be out soon on that. But you were on that last year. That session is available in our EL community. I'll link to it. It's really good. It's everything we talked about today and more. Plus, you get to see Adrian present and his slides, which is really good as well. So there's one thing, but what are some other ways that people can learn about the work you're doing? Where can they go?
Okay, so on social media, most of my social media, well, on all my social media, I have Adrian Mendoza no, it's not hashtag, it's
at.
Yeah,
at
@Adrian, Adrian Mendoza ED. That's going to be Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm also building my AdrianMendozaED.com. We also have our silenceeducation.com, where you're also going to see like webinars, resources. You're also going to find the different PD on our silenceeducation.com, different professional developments that we provide to teachers. They can be like face-to-face, virtual. And I constantly do the coaching where we go there and we also learn from mistakes. We interact with students in the classroom, and we also build like how can we be growing and implementing some of these strategies and also transforming education in the classroom. So Adrian Mendoza ED and silenceeducation.com will be the main places where you can find me.
Great. And we'll link to those for people who are driving or walking and can't jot that down. And I should say, I'm glad you mentioned John Silence. He introduced us. He's been a thought partner with me and at Elevation since I've started. And so we're thankful for the work that he does and all the great people that he sends our way. We're always happy to collaborate. So last question, Adrian, and this one I ask everyone. I'm wondering if there is a book or a film or any other resource at all, and it can be about anything, that has had an important influence on you, either personally or professionally, that you'd recommend to listeners.
Boom. So I'll recommend a couple of things. I'm reading for professional development this new book from Nancy Motley, Small Moves, Big Gains. Okay. But the thing is that my wife is reading the book Atomic Habits.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So every time that she reads a chapter, I read a chapter, we have a conversation. There's many relationships. So if you're thinking about like in educational aspect, the small moves, big gains, it's Nancy Motley talking in the classroom, but it does apply to those atomic habits just in general. So that's what my wife is reading. And we're having beautiful conversations about what we are reading and how we're connected to each
I
other.
Love
now,
that.
My wife is also a teacher, so she said, oh, now I want to read your book, and she wants to read my book. There's another clip that's at some point my dad shared with me. It's from this guy called named Rick LeBoy, and he makes an analogy about poker chips. There's a video about poker chips in the classroom. So Rick LeBoy, he talks about some kids coming to our classroom, okay, with plenty of poker chips. Let's pretend we're in Las Vegas, I have plenty of poker chips. What do? I'm just going to play my poker chips and I'm going to have fun in the classroom. But there's other kids that come with zero or one, very low poker chips. Mm-hmm. They don't want to play the game.
They
don't
can't take risks.
They can't take risks. So we as teachers, when I watched that video that my dad shared with me, I was like, we as teachers, we have plenty of poker chips in our pockets. And our role is to go back and say, notice, okay, these kids have zero poker chips. How am I going to celebrate what have a little celebration. I'm going to put those poker chips in those students' classrooms, and then making sure that every kids have poker chips to play mat games and just to play life. And that's going to be the, I think that that's a video that kind of changed my way of, when I go visit classrooms.
Great. So small moves, big gains. I always ask for one. Everybody gives three or four. It always happens. So small moves, big gains, Atomic Habits, and then this video that I'm going to actually ask you to send me so I can link to it in the blog and the show notes. And again, anybody listening, all that information is at elevationeducation.com/ELcommunity. We'll put a link to that in the show notes of this episode. And with that, Adrian, this has been a long time coming. I am so glad we did it. I'm so glad we could find time to connect. Your enthusiasm, passion, and knowledge in this area is obvious and contagious, which is, I think, exactly what we need right now. And so appreciate all the work you're doing and appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you, Steve. This is, to be honest, this is my first podcast episode. So I think I was just very excited. I do visit lots of campuses, school districts, where they use elevation. And for me, like, oh, I'm going to do this with elevation. This is a big thing for me. So I do appreciate that. I'm very excited. This is like a revolution also for me, like a math revolution. We're teaching language. So I think with elevation, with this partnership and with what we're doing together, I think we can change a one mindset and we can go from there. So one step at a time. Thank you for giving me your time and your space here. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.